What he knew from books. And books lied. They made things prettier.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all of social media's most popular books. We're reading them and letting you know how they go for busy young professionals before you take your own time to do so. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. And this week we are delving into a book of biblical proportions, meaning it's huge. So we are reading A Little Life by Hyana Yanagihara. And no, not even close.
Yeah, it's okay. We tried to look up the pronunciation and we are just struggling. But we tried today.
Yes, we really tried. I'm sorry.
We can go with Hanya, the 40-year-old Hawaiian woman.
Hanya, okay.
We'll just call her Hanya.
Hanya.
I'm sorry, Hanya.
Yes, Hanya, I'm very sorry. But you wrote a book. It's over 800 pages long. And I'm going to give a synopsis that's not going to make any sense, but we're going to go with it. This book kind of follows the lives of four friends in New York City. They met each other in college, and at the beginning of the book, they have graduated. They're in their professional lives, but all of them are kind of like the artsy people. So they're the people that make paintings and sculptures and do acting and then architecture, and then one's a lawyer. And they're trying to make their way through life in New York City. We're not totally sure what the time period is, but each of them has dealt with some form of trauma or some form of mental health situation, some more than others. And it's definitely really about their lives, going through their lives all the way up to like when they're in their 50s. And you just kind of follow them along and it switches perspectives in between each of them. And that's kind of all I can give as a synopsis.
They all have very diverse backstories, and you focus in on one specific character eventually whose backstory is so traumatic. Like, trigger warning, trigger warning, trigger warning. Oh my God. Read the trigger warnings.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's as good as a synopsis as we can give. Yeah, the book is about trauma and grief and friendship. But check the trigger warnings.
Emphasis on trauma.
Yes. So many different kinds of trauma. Do you guys have reviews?
A review that I thought was funny. And yeah. Okay. It's a 1-star review on Goodreads from Ashley. Fuck this book. And it started out so well. The writing is actually gorgeous. I can see why many, many people like this book. Really, the author knows how to use language. Unfortunately, the story she told was not worthy of it. The longer I read this book, the more I dreaded reading it. The worse my feelings got as I read, and the more I hated it for existing. Then I read a bunch of interviews by her and hated the book even more. The long and short of it is that this book is nothing but a misery poem on purpose.
Yeah. I have two. Yep.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you want to go next. Okay. The first one, I'm not going to read the whole review, but they have a quote at the beginning that I wanted to share. So this is a 1-star, and the quote is, "This is not a novel to be tossed aside lightly. It should be thrown with great force." And the next one is another 1-star review. The first part, August 2021. "I can't give this a rating. I don't even know what I think about it. I just wish I'd never read it." Then later, edit, "After months of sitting on this and finally collecting my thoughts, I can firmly say that I despise this book and I still wish I'd never read it."
The update makes it.
Despite what I'm about to read, I promise there are oodles and oodles of 5-star reviews out there. We have not chosen them.
Absolutely, a shocking number of them.
First, I'm going to read you one from a DNF because it made me giggle. This one says, "The bookstore literally let me return this, even though they have a no return policy, because this book is so traumatizing."
I relate to that because I also read the book and I want it out of my house. I don't want to look at it.
Right. So here's one where someone actually finished the book. 1-star review. Hey, Hanya, what the actual fuck?
Yep.
But like I said, I promise there are many, many, many 5-star reviews out there. This is a well-loved book. Overall Goodreads rating 4.3 out of 5. Overall Amazon rating 4.5 out of 5. It was a finalist for the Man Booker Prize and a National Book Award finalist. Like, it is a critically acclaimed book.
Yes.
We're doing it because it regained popularity because they turned it into a West End play this year, 2023, which apparently, now I understand when I say people left, when they said people left feeling ill because they left no parts out. I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, what was your star rating?
Yeah, so I gave this book 2.5 stars. I'm sure I will be echoed by both of you when I say the writing is beautiful. Hanya is a beautiful writer, and this book is very literature. Like, I understand why it is renowned in literature circles. However, it was so depressing. My biggest compliment for the book is I do believe it paints a realistic picture of the struggles of living with complex trauma. However, it is about 500 pages too long. Like, if I was editing this book, I would have taken an actual axe to it. And I really wanted the book to kind of come together where all the perspectives, the four friends who were initially introduced to, kind of came back and like connected more. But for most of the book, I was honestly really confused as to why they were all there, because once you hone in on the main character, two of the other characters kind of fall away and they're like barely in the book. And I was like, why did we spend so much time on these people in the beginning? Anyway, that's a long way of saying I spent most of this book bored and also sad, and I did not like it.
Yeah. I 100% echo those statements. I gave it 3 stars because of the writing, and I said in my review, the 3 stars are only because of the writing. And then I ended my review with, like, fuck, this book made me sad. It's just, I mean, it's depressing. And I can see the points that, like, everyone have whenever they have the 5-star reviews of just like, oh, it changed my perspective, it made me think, it's like really highbrow literature. I agree. I didn't like it though. So yeah.
Yeah. I also gave it 3 stars, pretty much identical reasoning. I think the writing was really beautiful and the character development was like so in depth. Too in depth. It took me 5 months to read this book. I had started it and stopped it and started it and stopped it. And finally we had some listeners be like, when are you doing a little life? And you were like, do we really have to? Mm-hmm. And, so we're doing this for you, our listeners who either loved it or wanted to know if they should read it. I hope you're still our listeners after this episode.
Please forgive us.
So yeah, 3 stars for me, 5 months of reading later.
Yep.
We've pushed back this episode so many times. We could not finish this book, guys.
I had put this book on our to read list in 2022. Like, yep. We have been knocking it back for like over a year.
And so we've been scheduling it in June and tried to force myself to read it.
And the first time we scheduled it for podcast was for April. So it's not April.
Yeah.
We are recording this mid-November.
And we also had scheduled a date to record this and locked it in stone, and we're like, this is the day we're recording it, and we pushed it back about 5 days from that date because none of us had finished the book still.
I think Catherine managed it on time, but
I did manage it on time. I was like, proud of myself.
Well, I'm like 85% done. It will take me no time. Me, that night, 4 hours later.
Caitlin and Catherine were so nice to me about pushing back this deadline because I was not even close to being done. And I really was begging them to just record it because I did not want to finish the book.
They weren't going to make her finish it either because we finished and we were like, yeah, we won't force that on you.
But she did it.
But I did it.
Guys, this is a big deal. These busy girls had a heck of a time with this book.
Yeah.
It's 817 pages.
Yep.
And it's not thick print, like it's small words.
Yeah. Tiny print.
The pages feel like they're so thin, it feels like you're reading a Bible.
It does.
Yeah. I had to listen to both the audiobook and read this book, a hardcover of this book, because I just couldn't find time to read it. And I'm pretty sure the audiobook is over 30 hours.
Yep.
We read thick books, y'all, but...
And it is
thick books that are 90% drama.
Yeah. Not an easy read. Very little action. This book is almost completely listening to a character's thoughts.
Speaking of, plot or character driven?
Definitely character driven. I mean, this book is the central character and the central plot is watching one of the main characters deal with his childhood trauma and kind of how he grows into an adult and struggles with that and like how everyone in his life try to support him and help him. And so we spend a lot of time in his head talking about the way his childhood has like informed his thoughts. And that is basically the plot of the book.
There is no plot. It's just this dude's life.
Mm-hmm.
And how he proceeds to have trauma into adulthood.
Yes. Have you read other books by the author?
Nope, and probably never will.
Yeah, no.
I'm actually going to be generous and say I would consider reading another book by this author, but I absolutely refuse to read another 800-page trauma dump, and so I will only read it if the reviews say it is not about trauma. I'm not reading another book with the central theme as trauma from this author.
I'm not reading another 800 pages of character development with nothing else. I'm sorry. You know me, I'm the plot girly. I'm the action girly. This was torture.
The funny thing is, I really thought Casey would give it more stars than either one of us, but we were the more generous ones.
And here is why I didn't like any of the characters.
Neither did I.
A book that is all about character development and not a single one of the characters is likable. Okay, that's too harsh. They're all likable. I just didn't think any of them were like, I was in love with them.
So actually, one of them is like not likable in any capacity, but
yeah.
Yes. And they all have their unlikable moments, which is part of why the book is so complex, as all the characters are super flawed. But I just really was not rooting for anyone. And a book about character development where you don't feel invested in what happens to the characters is just boring.
Okay. How about the pacing of the book? Like I said, 5 months to read after putting it off for a few months before that.
I wanted to DNF this book at least 6 times, and I hate DNFing books, and I was going to do it. The only reason I did not do it was for this podcast, so it is a 0.
What?
A 0 on the pacing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, the pacing sucks. I started this book in April, and then I got returned to the library 3 times. And then I eventually bit the bullet and bought it, and then got the audiobook to help me. And so, yeah, since April, it's November, you do the math. It's been months.
Guys, this is our most anticipated episode. Because we've been working on it for so long.
I'm going to be so happy when this is done and I can literally donate this book to Goodwill.
I'm sorry. This is the epitome of our mission, because right now we are truly doing the we read it for you.
Yeah.
We read it for you to tell you if you should read it. And here we are standing before you with our honest to God opinions. Like,
this
you're
is
welcome.
Like the only book where we've had multiple people reach out to us on social and be like, are you doing this book? And we've been like, Oh no.
We've been slightly ignoring it and then dreading it.
Yes. But yeah, so last question. This book is now a play, so I'll amend the question. Would you watch a movie or TV show of this book, or would you go see the play?
I'm sure if you are into the arts, in a certain kind of art scene, this is great for you. Also, I'd love to know the runtime of the play. I should Google that. Especially with the reviews, how visual the play is.
Nope.
Including a character laying there nude covered in blood. No. Don't want to see it. Sorry.
No. Absolutely not. Yeah, no, I would never want to see that. That's not something no.
Also, for a little bit of context for our listeners, part of the reason we're such adamantly about no, and why the fact that the play is so visual and did not take anything out of the book is so shocking, is because there's extensive childhood sexual abuse in the book.
Adult sexual abuse. There's just right. Half this book is about sexual abuse.
Yes.
And sexual trauma and
suicidal ideation.
Really, really hard book.
Yes.
Yeah, and physical, like, deforming.
Self-harm,
yeah.
I don't want to... It was bad enough in my head. I don't need someone else to bring it to life for me.
Yep. So all the things in the world that I really do not want to see with my own eyes. So no.
Okay. Well, here's going to be the interesting one. What is your busy girl rating? Remember, guys, this is not a quality rating for our listeners. This is a, did I enjoy the book? Would I recommend it to other people? Does it fit into the life of a busy young professional? So please do not be insulted when I say this is a busy girl zero from me.
Busy girl zero. I'd give it negatives if I could.
I am going to give it negatives. It's a negative 10.
Yeah.
This is not busy girl friendly. We're sorry. Despite how well written this book is, and it's so beloved by so many people, which is great. It's still an 810-page book about trauma. Like, that speaks for itself. You got to take some time to read it. You got to take some time to digest it. Busy girl, not friendly.
Because I do want to say, like, I do think there's a reader who would appreciate this book, as is obvious from, like, its, like, rave reviews. I still think it is an absolute bitch to fit into your schedule. And even me, who, like, loves a sad, mournful piece of literature, it's hard sometimes to spend all your free time reading something that is so sad. So just keep that in mind, because it's not sad for 300 pages. It's sad for 800. Well, that brings us to our spoiler alert section, I believe. You guys, buckle up. Even if you're not going to read the book, I highly recommend you look up the trigger warnings before you listen to the rest of our discussion, because it is going to be a heavy one.
I even saw a review that was like, a parent who does foster care was like, oh, this was a doozy if you were a foster care parent. Like, so like, please do take mind and your mental health into account before listening/reading.
Okay. Question one. Especially at the beginning of the book, there are a lot of switches in perspective through the four friends. So like Malcolm, JB, Willem, and Jude. What did you think of that? And then as the book goes on, how did you think about really honing in on Jude's perspective?
I was so confused for so much of the first like half of the book, trying to figure out whose perspective we were paying attention to and why. And then why suddenly those other perspectives disappeared. I understand it's so that you had these really intricate views of these friendships because you knew a little bit about these people in Jude's life. But, and I don't know. I hated JB. JB sucks. It was, I don't know if I liked switching between all the perspectives. I don't know if they added what I needed to the story. And then randomly at some point you throw in letters from Harold that I was like, what? Mm-hmm. It was a lot. I could have lived with just JB and Willem's perspectives.
Well, not
plus only there are flashbacks.
Yeah, not that's what I was about to say. Not only is it switching perspectives, it's not in linear time. Like you would think it's linear time, but they're going into the future. They're going into the past. They're writing letters from the future into the past, talking about past things. And then especially towards the end of the book, when you're learning more about Jude's childhood trauma, it suddenly will flash back to when he's 7, when he's 12, when he's 13. And like you learn everything about what happened to him, which is like, I want to say 500 pages into the book. So you don't know in totality what happened to Jude, which I get as a narrative device, it makes sense to like say like he's very private and he doesn't have the words to talk about it. So that's kind of what the whole point is. So he doesn't tell anyone of his friends, which is understandable, but you know that something terrible happened to Jude and you can kind of guess some of what it was, but then they go into depth about it. So it's just like, it is both time, it's mind fucking, it's time like looping, it's a lot. And then I don't understand, my one critique is, why did we have Malcolm's perspective? Because he never comes back the rest of the book. It happens once.
He comes back to die.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, we didn't need that perspective. If at all, that would be part of the book I would definitely cut out if you wanted to limit the page count.
So I have a very similar opinion. I actually thought the perspective jumps and the time jumps were done really well. I was able to like pick up on where we were in time and who we were, whose head we were in really quickly every time I felt like it switched. And I felt like other authors, because now everyone is doing these jumps and they could all study how Anya does this. However, I think the first 200 pages of the book set you up for a different book. Because what I wanted and what I think I would have enjoyed more is if the book was still divided more equally between the four characters and they were all like, it was creating that like narrative arc of like, you can see them all kind of going together to one endpoint. But I honestly felt like Jude was the only interesting character. And so when you were in the other characters' heads, I was bored. And then they don't really come back. And you kind of, and I at least kind of felt like, why did we do that? Like the same thing you say about Malcolm, even Willem and JB are hardly in the book once we focus in on Jude. And like, I just didn't really understand that structure. I felt like it was a little needless and like added a lot of page numbers that like didn't need to be there. And so you go from like getting a lot of perspectives that end up being kind of like useless to then just having depression. And it's like, it's a lot. Like the reason I think I would have liked the book more if the other characters had stayed in it more is they would have been able to break up the like depression and sadness and horror of Jude's narrative a little bit more. But yeah, it was just, it was a lot. And I feel like it was kind of too much.
Yeah. I will say I'm going to defend the first 200 pages of the book. Not because I found it good to read, because I actually wanted to DNF within the first 200 pages, cause I was just bored. But I understand it as a narrative arc in the sense that Jude is a very private person. So it makes sense for his friends to be wondering about his life. And you get that through those three perspectives in the first 200 pages. They're just like, Jude doesn't talk about himself. He just kind of sits back and listens to his friends. And he seems happy, but he seems okay. But there's this darkness surrounding him. So as a narrative device, I thought that was really interesting because it made me want to know what Jude was thinking and what Jude was dealing with. And yeah, he's the most interesting character for sure. But so I liked it in that sense, thinking in hindsight. But yeah, it's too long of a book. There are parts you definitely can cut. And I think I read, I forget where it was, but the author talked to a magazine about the book. And apparently her editor wanted to cut down all of Jude's childhood flashback scenes because he thought it was a little too grotesque and too descriptive. And she fought back and said no, that it needed to be in there. I don't know whether or not that it should have been in there, or I understand the merits of it if you're going to have a book like this, but I think there could have been other things that could have been cut down because it was a very descriptive book about mundane things sometimes. And you're just kind of like, yeah, I know what going to dinner is like. Like, I don't need a very descriptive 20 pages on dinner.
Yeah. See, I do agree with that because even though the descriptions of trauma were really difficult to read, I did feel like they were well written and I did feel like they were used with a purpose. So I was not bothered by like the function of trauma or the depiction of trauma. It was actually the mundane parts of the book that bothered me because they were just so drawn out.
What did you guys think about the vague New York setting after the vague, probably Harvard college experience and vague time period?
I really wanted them to put a year out there. I was bothered by the fact that there was no year the entire book. And for some reason, I was like picturing the 80s the whole time. I don't know if that was just because the writing style, but I was just like, I didn't mind New York City as a setting. And I think it made sense because a lot of the characters are artists and are very ambitious. And so I think the characters make sense because they do seem like people who would be in New York for their careers. The lack of a time period bugged me.
Yeah, because especially there was a part in the book where Willem and Jude get together and form a relationship. And Willem had never come out as gay before, and neither had Jude technically. And so he's like a famous actor at this point, and he goes to his agent, and his agent's like, oh, this is going to ruin you. It's going to typecast you as the gay character for all of your movie acting roles. And I really wanted to know, when was he coming out? Because I think that would have been a very interesting thing in the time period, because then afterwards it actually doesn't hurt him as much. So I'm starting to think that we're in the 2000s by then, because they're in their 50s or late 40s, early 50s. So I'm thinking that like when we started the book, we were in the 80s, 90s, and then now we're in the 2000s, 2010s. But I would really like to know exactly when that was so that I could frame my whole time period reference. So I agree with Casey.
Well, in the piece Missing, we're in New York City for most of the book. The World Trade Towers are never referenced. If you're writing A Little Life in New York City, that probably gets referenced. I understand it doesn't need to be in there. It's like an extra obstacle to navigate, but like that doesn't help with the time period setting, you know?
Yeah.
Also, they're all supposedly Ivy League artist grads who you're like, oh, they're living in a slum life after being Ivy League kids. And then they all end up wildly successful because it's New York and it's what dreams are made of. And I was like, I understand rags to riches for Jude's character. The rest, I was like, why?
Yeah, I felt the same. I thought it was a little bit unrealistic because they all have, for the most part, not so much Jude, but like Willem, Malcolm and JB all have like very out there, hard to succeed in careers. Malcolm made a little more sense just because he comes from money, and like starting your own architectural firm is obviously easier if you have a lot of wealth to like back that up. But at a certain point, the level of success they reached was like a little unrealistic because it wasn't just that they were successful. It was that they were all world renowned at what they did. And I was like, okay, you can be successful without being world renowned. Like, this is stretching my belief system a little bit.
And like, I get then also the point about like, even the wealthiest people in the world have issues, but like, did they all have to be super wealthy, world traveling, crazy successful people in New York City? It just seems, I don't know, too ideal, especially for what they were going through. Like, when they were slummed in that tiny apartment in Chinatown, I was like, okay, I see it. And then they were magically all successful.
I was actually really disappointed that Malcolm was not in the book more, because I did think Malcolm's struggles, like negotiating his parents and also like negotiating his sexuality and his sense of identity, was interesting. And then he is like the person who ends up least in the book. And I was like, what happened to all that? Why are we not following up on any of that?
You're right. You open this whole can of worms. Like, is he black enough? Is he straight enough? Like, what is happening? And then it just kind of moves on. It's like, oh, okay.
And is he making his parents proud? Because his parents are very wildly successful, rich people on the Upper East Side, and his sisters meeting their expectations, but he feels like his parents like Jude more than him because he's a hotshot lawyer and they wish that they had him as a son. So it's a very complicated feeling with Malcolm, but it's only delved into that one time at the beginning of the book. And then we just really never see Malcolm again. Yeah,
you dip into the issue with his parents right at the end when Malcolm has died and Jude's like hanging out with his parents out of guilt. And they're like, you know, we loved him. And that was kind of the end of Malcolm's story. It really didn't have an arc. It just kind of started, disappeared, then stopped.
He was introduced to die, to be
collateral. He built them a house.
Yeah, to be collateral later in the book and to build them these beautiful homes that they all own. Yeah, I mean, that kind of does also segue perfectly into our next question, which is, what did you guys think of each of the friends?
I'll say it again. JB sucks.
Yeah, JB's a narcissist for sure. And he really is a pathological liar as well, because he comes from money, but he wants to convince his friends in like school that he doesn't come from money and that he's like his single mom raised him, which is true. He has a single mother, but it's a whole family surrounding him. And his mother is a very successful professor. And JB is black. And so JB plays on stereotypes of black kids raised by single mothers to get attention for himself. And then when they find out that, oh no, like he actually is raised by like really powerful women that are really wildly successful, he just like goes with it. And it's just all
he's the fat kid who wants attention. Like, it's so... he's so bizarre, and I don't know. They like keep him as a friend out of guilt and obligation just because they're like, well, we've been friends this long, guess we have to keep growing. But he's kind of a terrible person who uses his friends to make his career successful, even when they've asked him not to. Mm-hmm. And then you get this weird little side plot about him being addicted to heroin or meth or whatever it was. And
almost used as an attempt to make us like him by feeling pity for him. And I was like, no.
It made me like him less.
Yeah.
If that's possible.
I mean, and I think it made sense about like addictive personalities. And he so wanted to fit in that he just was like trying anything, and drugs was like something that he tried to fit in. And not that it was a redemption arc. I think that's what it was kind of supposed to be. But like, I felt pity for him, but I didn't feel like sorry for him, and I didn't feel like attached to him. And like, he continues to be him.
Yeah, he's the device to get all these other bonus characters in the book. He's the social butterfly. He forces them to go to these parties, and he knows all the people because he has this desire to be known. And so that's how they end up with a lot of the side characters. The other artists, the Henry Youngs, things like that. And this, it does kind of, I was okay with this portion of his story that kind of pointed out that your best friends in early adulthood, like, there are growing pains, and sometimes those friendships, like, aren't meant to last, but you hold on to them just because of what you went through. And it was a whole narrative about turning college friendships into adult friendships, which was okay. It just, I didn't need that much JB in the book.
So kind of one of my core gripes with this book, and one of the reasons why I push back on the idea that this book is a classic, I'm like, yes, the characters are incredibly complex. Also, the character development of all of them is really significant, which I think is what makes this book such an iconic piece of literature. To me, its failure is that I did not feel the love in their relationships. I did not get why they were friends. I didn't get what they liked about each other and like what it was like for them to spend time with each other. The characters felt real, but their interpersonal relationships did not. And that's something I ended up really struggling with Jude's narrative, is I was like, not that I don't believe Jude didn't deserve love and didn't deserve help, because he obviously did. But I was like, why do all these people care so much about Jude? He seems like a nice person, but it is true that you develop intimacy with people and trust with people by sharing things with them. And so I did almost feel skeptical that they could all love him that much when he had been such a blank slate on purpose. And, you know, I can see a version of the story where like it would make sense to me, but the way it's written, I just don't really understand it.
Yeah, I feel like the Jude we see is only his internal struggle, his thoughts, not the fun they have as friends that makes them stick around or whatever we're missing. Like, there is something missing. Not that this book needed any more pages. But I was thinking the whole time, I was like, wow, I could never be as good a friend as Willem.
Like, yeah.
I don't know why this dude is sticking around. I liked Willem in the sense that he was a stick around friend. I liked him for the reason that his character comments on sometimes there are friendships that go beyond friendship, and there's like weird in betweens that, you know, don't have a name. The idea of soulmates who are your friends, that kind of thing. And I really loved that glimpse of happiness that it gave Jude at one point, but I was like, okay, and now he's dead. Okay. I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but the late book car crash felt so desperate to me. I was like, yep, predictable, of course. As Willem and Jude got together, I was just waiting for Willem to die. I was like, all right.
Me too. 100%. Yeah. I said, okay, when does Willem die?
Because that's it, like, halfway at the book through the book is when they kind of get together. And the whole thing, like, that part's called the happy years. And I'm like, great. So there's the sad years, too.
And then Willem dies. And there's still like 50 plus pages in the book. I was like, oh my God, what is left? Oh,
it was almost 100.
I don't know. But I was like, okay, I knew he was going to die. I thought it would be the end. It wasn't. Like, this book is torturous with all the trauma Jude experiences. Maybe there's a person out there who has experienced this much trauma, but like, oh my God, it almost seemed like it was just trauma after trauma after trauma to purely elicit emotion. But at that point, I was out of emotions. I was just like, please make it stop. I'm not sure why we had to kill Willem. He was the only likable character outside of Harold, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, this kind of also leads to our next question, which is Jude's flashbacks, the depictions of his horrifying childhood. What did you think about his life story? And how did you, experience how that impacted his relationships with others.
When you didn't think it would get worse, it got worse.
Yeah.
And this was honestly the one beautiful part of the book, was the deep dive into trauma and how it affects someone's perspective on their life, on how it affects how someone accepts or doesn't accept love, their thinking around things like sex and healthy relationships and the value of their own lives. And it was a really, really beautiful dive into complex trauma. I just don't think as a reader I needed that much trauma to get that message.
Like, I totally agree, because I could see the value in the flashbacks. I actually, not that I enjoyed them, because that's the wrong word to say, but I think that they were an important part of the book that should be kept in. And I think it was an interesting way of depicting it through. He gets together with Willem. Willem is kind of demanding to know more, because he's just like, I want to know why you're so averse to sex. I want to know why you feel like you have to keep these things, why you have to keep cutting yourself. And you kind of learn that he learns cutting through a former priest brother in a monastery who sells this 12-year-old's body for sex with men. And he teaches him to cut himself to release all of the toxic things in his blood, as if it's dirty after those acts. And that's where he feels like he has to release like this grime and dirt from his body, which is a very profound and very like interesting depiction of trauma and self-harm. What I didn't think was necessary was to continue to pile on trauma post all of that stuff. I think we could have had a happy ending for Jude and Willem without all the last part of the book.
So I will defend some of the things that happen later, just because trauma does warp people's abilities to see red flags so deeply that if you have been abused in childhood, you are extremely likely to end up in abusive relationships as adults. And so I understand why things continue, because sadly, many people who are victimized in childhood do continue to end up in situations where they're victimized because their perceptions of what is right and wrong is so skewed. And you see that with Jude, where he has such deep self-loathing that when Caleb treats him badly, he's like, yes, I'm getting what I deserve. And it was like a form of self-harm to be with Caleb. And so I get it, and I get his relationships with others. My problem is, again, that I think the depiction of trauma is so large that we don't get to see other pieces of Jude. And we know other pieces of him exist because he is so beloved. He has so many friendships. But, and they reference it all the time that like Jude is so smart, Jude's a great storyteller, Jude is funny. And I'm like, well, we never see Jude being funny, you know? And it's hard to conceptualize him as a complete person when every single piece of him we get in the book is about trauma.
Yeah, the back of the book describes Jude as enigmatic. And I just never saw that piece of him. Like, he's smart and brilliant and a dedicated friend, but that's about as far as we get. I agree with you on the look at how people who are in traumatic relationships as children often end up in traumatic relationships as adults. That was a really interesting thing to explore, and how, you know, he was waiting for Harold to hit him or whatever, or disown him, and like was really sad. I just, we could have shortened the book. There could have been less.
I will say,
so much less.
Did we need to have it to the point where he's kicked down the stairs and pushed out into the rain naked and then raped multiple times, like in that one scene? Like, I don't know that we needed to do all that,
No.
But I understand why it was an abusive relationship and why that was in the book.
Yeah, I understand him and Caleb's relationship, and I totally agree, I think, with your points, Casey. All I'm saying is we probably could have ended the book with Willem and Jude post that and limited the amount of pages in this book. But yes, I agree with you, Caitlin. We just see his very like trauma-induced thinking about everything in his life, where he's just like, oh, they hate me. They must think I'm disgusting. They must think I'm gross and disabled and this these terrible things that aren't actually true, because people, none of them, all of them love him. And they are not seeing all of his flaws. He is just hyper realizing. He's just so aware of his own imagined flaws that he can't understand why people love him. And I thought that was very interesting prose and very interesting like internal dialogue. Mm-hmm. It's just, this book is so long. I'm looking for places to cut. And
yeah. It's not even that there's too much drama. It's just too drawn out. Like, yeah. It's so detailed, so long. You get so little reprieve in between it. And then he's got like Stockholm syndrome for this brother Luke guy, basically. And it's just, it's too much heartbreak, too long heartbreak.
I agree. And so, like, the author kind of intersperses Jude's past throughout the middle of the book. I personally found it frustrating because I knew there was more. Also, the trauma is kind of predictable. Like, not every single detail is predictable, but you understand that, you know, before you even are told that Jude has some sort of, like, horrific sexual trauma. It's very obvious. And so, the whole time we were just waiting for the rest of the story, I was just kind of like, can you just give it to me now? Like, can I just hear it? I'm ready to just have it. Like, I don't need all of this hemming and hawing.
Yeah, you get all this teasing about Dr. Traylor and you're like, oh God, is it medical abuse? Like, what's happening? No, he was literally kidnapped and held in a basement. I was like, really?
After all this? It's climactic. It did. Who would think that being kidnapped and held by a captor and sexually abused for 3 months would be an anticlimactic piece of the story? But it was.
Yeah, it was kind of like, all right, that's about right. Poor Jude. There he goes again. Like, which, I mean, as part of his character development, it was just like we keep saying, too long, too drawn out, too much.
Also,
and missing the pieces of Jude that I feel like we should have had.
Yeah, and a part that I felt was missing post the Dr. Traylor stuff is there's this relationship he has when he's trying to apply for college and after he's gotten out of these abusive situations with this woman named Anna, who's a, like kind of a social worker almost.
And she is, yeah.
She is a social worker and is on his case and is actually on his side and knows that he went through some stuff and she's trying to help him find ways to vocalize it, because she says if you don't talk about it now, you're never going to talk about it. Like, you need to find the words to talk about it. And she's right, but we see her at the beginning of the book before we know all the trauma, and then we don't see her ever again. And I know she dies and all that stuff, but with the amount of time jumps we went through, I totally thought that they could have delved more into that relationship.
And well, also, why does every good person in Jude's life have to die?
So to comment on Catherine saying there could have been a happy ending with him and Willem, I don't think there could have. I don't think Jude would have ever been happy. I think some people cannot beat their battle with mental health issues, which is terribly sad, and I'm not saying people shouldn't try or people shouldn't try to help those people in their lives, but I think in the case of this specific character, he was fighting a losing battle with his mental health, and happiness was never fully happiness because he couldn't look back on his past and ever allow himself to feel true unencumbered joy, which is the saddest part of the whole book, is you knew Jude was never going to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it, I don't know, it leads into deeper discussions about, do you keep the people you love here just for yourself? And that kind of thing. Like, that's a whole philosophy debate, you know?
Right.
I just don't think a happy ending was possible for Jude because of his past, because he was always looking backwards, not forwards.
I agree with that. And that's part of the tragedy of the book that I actually liked, because unfortunately, I do think that is realistic. Like, the things that happen to you in your childhood are so foundational to how you see yourself and how you see the world, that there are things that you cannot rewrite. And again, like Caitlin, you said, I'm not saying that doesn't mean anyone who is sexually abused in childhood can't be happy. I'm not saying that that means that those people aren't worth fighting for, but that is part of why I did not understand why they had to kill off Willem and Malcolm, because I was like, there's no way Jude does not commit suicide, period. Like, the book was always going to end with Jude committing suicide because he is deeply hurt and just deeply, deeply damaged. And I, like, again, Caitlin, it does like get into that debate. And that's what the whole kind of ending of the book was about, is like, at what point are you in too much pain, you know? And that's a really hard thing to decide, but like,
yeah, at what point is love mean letting someone go?
Yeah. And I think like by the end of the book, the people in Jude's life kind of accept that like there is no coming back for him anymore. But I think that was always going to be the ending of the book. And I think the book would have been a lot shorter if they had just not focused so much on like, if it had not focused so much on building him and Willem's relationship just to kill off Willem.
Yeah, I agree with that. And especially because Jude was refusing help. That's part of the reason why it was inevitable that he was going to try and commit suicide again, because he does halfway through the book. And then at the end of the book, he does actually do it. His friends and his family love him so much that they're like, you have to see the psychiatrist, you have to see the psychologist. And they put him on antidepressants, and he talks about how weird he feels. He talks about how he just feels numb, that he feels no emotions whatsoever. And I thought that was a very beautiful part of the book, talking about how medication isn't always the answer for people, because it can just numb life in general, where you don't feel the high highs along with the low lows. And so I really liked that part. But I guess I just wish we got more of the Dr. Lohman of it all. I wish we kind of got more. I wish he got help. I mean, like, that's the optimist in me. I wish that he was willing to get help, and I wish his family understood more that.
Right. In the age of we're better about talking about mental health, I feel like we were all hopeful that, you know, therapy, people that love him would help. And that's what was so crushing about the book, is it didn't. And it's this commentary on, there are some people who just won't allow themselves to be saved. And no one wants to think along those lines. Like Harold, you want to keep trying despite how tortured Jude is, just because your own moral compass says, I love this person and I value their life. But, you know, it gets into this, and it was a really tough but good description of what someone having suicidal thoughts was thinking and how it affects the people around them. And that was like another just really good depiction of trauma and complex trauma and how it affects more than just the person who experienced it. It was just, you're right, like, there was no happy ending for Jude. Did we have to take Willem and Malcolm with him, you know? And then you get the letter from Harold to deceased Willem at the end, which is the most heartbreaking part, because you see the after effects of that life that other people wanted to go on, but the person who was in possession of that life did not.
Yeah, and I think part of like the narrative arc that I liked was that Anna basically like foreshadows the ending, because she's like, if you can never learn to talk about this, you will never heal from it. And that's basically what happens. He can never find the language to discuss what happens to him because he cannot be honest with the people in his life. He never heals because he can never accept his past. He spends his entire life fighting what happened instead of trying to accept it and move forward. And if you are never, because he, part of why it was so toxic to him that he never spoke about it is because he always believed that people would not love him if they knew his full history. And because he was never able to put aside his shame and be truly vulnerable, and we understand why that is, it's not blaming him, but that's just how it happened for him. He can never recover, you know, and that is just, it is like a great commentary, I think, about how, yeah, if someone cannot get to the point where they are able and willing to talk about what's happened to them and be vulnerable, like they cannot heal. And he just could, he could not heal. Even with Willem and everyone fighting for him, he was not able to get to that place.
Yeah, Jude's fatal flaw, quite literally, is his self-doubt and his self-worth. And because he can't overcome that, you know, you end up with this terribly unhappy ending.
Well, and I think what makes it even more of a tragic ending is he did find the way to tell his story to Willem, and then he didn't feel comfortable telling it to anyone else once Willem died, which is totally reasonable and understandable. Willem was his person. And then he starts to follow a journey with Dr. Lohman where he is willing to be there and is willing to be helped a bit. Not a lot, but it was enough to where he wasn't just actively avoiding it. He was actually coming back to the therapy space. And then he writes a letter after his death, or right before his death, to Harold describing, and Julia, describing all of the stuff that he went through. So he did find the words to tell them, but it wasn't until after his death that they learned about it.
That letter he stuck in there during his adoption.
No, it was post.
There were two letters. There was one that he had written before, and then there was one that he had written after. And it was the one he, or the one he had written right before he committed suicide. And so the one he had written right before he committed suicide was the one that like had all the details in it. But yeah, I mean, because he couldn't tell them and live. He couldn't tell them and look them in the eyes and believe that they would love him and accept them, which is so heartbreaking. But yeah, but like, I just feel like all of this like horrible, painful, beautiful tragedy was like weighed down with like mundane details.
Something that we do, arguably the highlights of the book, are the found family aspect of Jude's life with Willem, who's also missing a family, with Harold and Julia, who adopt him at age 30, with these other friends like Richard and Andy that come in and out and quite literally keep him alive. We love found family, chosen family, but did you like it in this book?
I loved Harold and Julia. I really did. I honestly, I did not feel like I needed Harold's perspective. However, I loved their presence in the book.
It wasn't needed, but it was a nice reprieve.
Well, and it was the after effects, the shock waves of suicide. That was Harold's perspective.
Yeah. Also, have you guys read, this is a random thought that just popped into my head, have you guys read The Sun Also Rises?
It's on my TBR.
It kind of reminds me of this book because we're about to get into talking about Willem and Jude. But it reminds me of this book a little bit because in that book, the main male character is a veteran and sustains some kind of war injury to where he can't have sex. And so he can never be with like the woman he's in love with because they can never have like a sexual relationship. And it's kind of like in the 1920s. So you're not able to have an open relationship, basically. And that's kind of like became the foundation for like part of Jude and Willem's conflict together, is they have to totally renegotiate what a relationship means. Because what they are to each other is certainly more intimate than a friendship, but it's not a sexual relationship. And that part of the book where they are having sex is so complicated and so hard to read, because it's like just such like a so brutal for both of them. But the kind of coming out on the other side was one of the highlights of the book, because they basically decide that they don't have to have a traditional relationship and they can renegotiate it. But I was also like, I don't know that I could have made the decision that Willem made. What did you guys think of all of that?
Like I said earlier, I can never be as good a friend as Willem was. the happy year section of the book was probably my favorite part, because it was happier than the rest of the book. Not that it was happy, because like you said, them navigating their sexual relationship was really difficult and involved a lot more self-harm on Jude's part. And I don't know. I really loved that they found their like person in each other. These two kind of wandering souls with no real family found each other, and then found Harold and Julia, basically. And I liked it, and I liked the depiction. It was a really good look at what survivors of sexual abuse, you know, they're not ever going to look at sex the same way. It may not be as extreme as what Jude is experiencing, but like, I feel like a lot of times we read books and it's like, and people go through trauma and then they recover. But if you're a sexual abuse survivor, that's always in the back of your head, probably. So it was complicated, but really beautiful. It was the happier parts, even though it was still complex. I don't know how to put it into words. This book made me feel a lot of ways. None of them were super happy, though.
No. Yeah. No, it's hard, because you're happy that, because Jude is, for lack of a better term, happy or content in the relationship with Willem. The issue is because of mass media and because of society, he felt this pressure to have sex. So Willem is warned by Andy before they enter in this relationship, and before he admits to Jude that he has feelings for him, that it's going to be a hard relationship and you're going to be in it for the long run if you do this, because you cannot break up with him, and it's going to be a non-traditional relationship. And Willem is okay with that until he's in it and he's like, oh, now I get what he meant by that. And it's not that he isn't okay in the relationship and content, but he does rely on sex, and Willem's had sex a lot in his life. So he does kind of rely on it in relationships a bit. And Jude kind of knows that and feels this sort of obligation to be part of it, and lies to Willem saying that, like, oh yeah, I can't feel pleasure or anything like that. Like, just like stuff like that. And Willem kind of knows throughout their sexual relationship that something's off and something's wrong, but he wants to believe that it's okay because Jude's not telling him it isn't. And so when it finally comes to a head, Willem does feel a lot of guilt for not recognizing it sooner. And I thought that was kind of a beautiful moment in the book, where it's just like they're trying to renegotiate the terms, and Jude finally says what he went through and finally opens up to his friend of 30 plus years and his boyfriend. And it's a really interesting part of the book. I definitely really liked that part of the book. It was interesting then going to Willem's perspective, where he starts having an open relationship where he has sex with women. Mm-hmm. And then we had that description. That was a little interesting, but yeah, I thought that was a really in-depth and important part of the book.
Yeah, I also felt like This is almost where, like, I felt really sad for both of them because they basically come to the realization that they can't, like Willem does, that he can't get what he needs from Jude, and he has to decide if that's okay with him or not. And like wanting a sexual relationship with the person you're in love with is like a totally normal thing to want. And it's also like, if you want that, you should be able to have it. Like most people want that. And I felt sad for him because I feel like being able to have sex with someone who you feel deeply connected with and giving that up for the rest of his life is like is a huge sacrifice. And so I feel like it's one of those conflicts where you really feel for both of them because you understand why Jude can never have sex. Like that part of his life is just never going to be like the healing Jude could have reached would never have allowed him to have had sex. And Jude deserves to be loved, but also like you also deserve to be able to be in a sexual relationship. And so it was just such like a brutal conflict. And that is one of the points where I was like, I just don't think I could have been Willem. Like that's, to me, that's too much of a sacrifice, but
I don't think most of us could have been Willem. And I don't think it makes anyone a bad person for acknowledging that because.
Yeah.
I don't know. That is a really important part of intimacy for most people.
Yeah. And even on the flip side, for Jude's part, it does hurt to like say no over and over again to someone that you love, you know?
When I think part of it is, had they been, you know, 25 and not 50, it would have been a different story.
Yeah.
But they're 50.
Right. So they were willing and able to like look past it. And then there's this whole discussion about like the things you can get from a partnership and the things you have to give up. And like, I do agree that like you can never depend on one person for like everything you want in life. But I was also like, but when I say that, I mean more like hobbies, not like your ability to have a sexual relationship with someone. Like, I understand if, you know, my future partner doesn't want to read books with me, but that is one of the things I'm willing to give up and not other things. So I was like, oh, I don't know. It was so hard for me to believe.
Right. It's different than I want someone who's smart, who's funny and patient, and you get funny and patient, but not smart. You know, like that's mm-hmm. different than. And that's what it's kind of describing when it's talking about this. And then it's like, but I'll be okay with not having sex and fulfilling that.
Not
elsewhere.
Having, not and having I think parent physical need is like a little different than not having.
And it's like pretty. I have yet to see an example of an open relationship that works. Because intimacy is key to most relationships.
And the only reason it did work is because, like, Willem knew and accepted that Jude was not saying no because he wanted to or because he didn't like him, but because he had this deep, complex trauma that just, like, was immovable. Any other reason is just, like, it's not going to work. And so I was just, honestly, I felt like in some ways, it was, like, almost too ideal that they managed to navigate that.
That was the beauty of Willem.
Perfect Willem.
And that's why it seems unbelievable, because most of us wouldn't be Willem.
Yeah. No. Yes. And I agree. The age did matter a lot. I was like, okay, maybe.
Yeah, they lived longer life experiences, come to learn what they valued in life. And it was each other.
Yeah. So the last part of the book, we finally get a lot of people's grief. So you see everyone who comes out and is really trying to get Jude to live and to want to live. And they work so hard to get him to the point where he wants to live. And then you can kind of sense that people are aware it's not going to happen, at least that Harold is aware that like his attempts to get Jude to keep living are eventually going to fail. What did you think of the description and the depiction of grief and loss from Jude and Harold's perspective?
So I kind of mentioned, like, did we need Harold's perspective? No, But I didn't mind his letter as the kind of like the shockwaves of suicide. There are people in my life who have lost people close to them or family members to suicide. And suicide hurts the people left behind more than it hurts the person who leaves, you know? Like, so I think that was probably one of the actually harder things to read was Harold and Julia, you know, forcing him to eat his sandwich, hugging him when he's waiting for them to hit him. And he's trying so hard to get them to stop loving him so he can leave. And that was so painful to read. And then Harold's grief of like, he always assumed, you know, he's lost a second child now, but this one, it was despite his efforts instead of, like, he felt like he could have helped this one where he couldn't have fixed Jacob's illness. And he feels like he fails. And he is 70 whatever and has buried two children before him. And it's, I don't know, his point of view at the end was kind of, I don't want to say a breath of fresh air. It's outside of Jude's trauma, which is nice, but it's like, you understand the other side of the battle. Like, you feel for Jude, but then you see what it does to the people in his life.
Well, and there's this discussion with Jude and Harold where Harold made him promise not to try to commit suicide again. And that was before, that was when Willem was still alive and after his first suicide attempt. And so he made Harold this promise. So that's the only thing that's keeping him here is essentially that promise, because he loves Harold so much and respects him that he feels like he can't break that promise. But he's trying to get around it throughout this ending part where he's starving himself and not eating and withering away so it could make it seem like it wasn't suicide. And what was even more heartbreaking is that he starts hallucinating Willem. And then so he actively reaches out to see if he could do it again, if he could hallucinate him again. But then he starts seeing the hallucinations of Brother Luke and Dr. Traylor. And it's just so heartbreaking that he couldn't even get reprieve even in then. And you get it from Harold's perspective then of just like, I just wanted my son to live after experiencing one of my son's losses. Like, I just wanted him to have a good life. And it's so heartbreaking getting that from Harold's perspective, because now he's dealt with two very traumatic losses of his children. And
well, it goes back to like, you know, Jude's not getting a happy ending, because anyone who tries to commit suicide and then has a plan for a second time isn't going to fail eventually. Like, it's sad, but it's true. Like, if they want it to happen, it will happen despite everybody's best efforts. And that's what's horrible to watch, is you're just waiting for the win.
Yeah. So obviously in the end, Jude, you know, is successful, as we've said. I do appreciate Harold being the ending perspective, because I think it does give a nice resolution. And you are able to kind of leave the book with like a sense of peace, which I think is good. But what did you think of the ending and about JB being the only friend left?
Yeah, I thought that was a sad commentary from Harold of like, JB used to be the life of the party and laughing and stuff like that. But literally, Andy dies 3 years later from a heart attack. Richard dies, I think, 2 years later from a stroke. So like, all of his friends die young, like from unintended consequences. They all seem to die. And so it's JB having to make a new entire friend group at the age of like 60 or something like that, or like 59, 60. And while I don't like JB, I don't wish that on anyone.
No. Like, yeah. JB wasn't that bad of a person.
Right. Like, you don't like JB, but you do feel bad for him. It's kind of fitting, though, like you said. Like, he goes from being the person that holds everyone together to being the person left behind. And I think that's like part of the reason that the author kills off Willem and Malcolm was for the commentary on JB being the last left. But also it was just like, oh my God, please make it stop.
Yeah. Had never been so glad to just be done with a book. But
that's did you find the end satisfying?
No.
Oh, I actually did find the end satisfying.
Okay.
I didn't ultimately.
No, I'm not happy that like the suicide attempt was successful for anything, but did you feel like you had questions left at the end? Were you satisfied? Oh,
yeah, no, I'm satisfied. Like, I don't feel like I have any lingering thoughts or questions about this book.
Yeah, I thought it was the right ending for the book. And I thought it was a good mix of sad and, again, maybe not hopeful, but just like acceptance. And so I thought like the ending tone was like a good tone to end on.
I agree. It's complicated because you don't want to feel at peace that Jude has died, but at the same time, like, you do feel at peace because he was suffering so badly.
Yeah.
Not with physical illness, but mental illness. And it's like, no, you never want to see that end for someone. And the end is never the end because there's people left behind. But you're right. I think the tone of the last bit with Harold was, I felt it completed it correctly.
Yeah.
Well,
the battle was over. Everyone got to be done fighting, even if that came about in a very sad way.
Well, I think this has been our most positive discussion about a book that we all didn't like.
Yeah. It's the way I felt about Ninth House, where we all gave it 4 stars and then shit on it the whole time.
So it's the opposite.
Yeah, it's the opposite experience.
Yeah, like this is a hard book. I am sad. I spent so much of my time reading a sad thing. I do feel accomplished for reading it and understanding why people... I understand why people like it so much. Not my cup of tea. Beautifully written book.
Yeah.
So I guess satisfying that I achieved it, but sad I spent so much time on sad things.
Yeah, I could have been reading something else.
Yeah. Does it have significant literary merit? It does. Do I wish I have DNF'd? Absolutely, I do. Will I be recommending this book to anyone? No.
Speaking of book recommendations, do y'all have any book recommendations based on this book or what you think would be better for our Busy Girls listeners? Well, since we're silent here, I'll go first. I'm going to recommend our first episode, The Midnight Library.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, because I think it is a shorter book, one, so it's better for busy girls. I like the fantasy element of it. It does deal with suicide as well. So the person in the book commits suicide and is transported to a library that is her life, where she could pick out books of like would have, could have, should have. And see like how her life would have been if she had done those specific things in her life. And I thought that was a really interesting take on mental health and the afterlife or the in-between world. I think it has a little bit of a better ending. Yeah, I just think if you want something about mental health and suicide, I would recommend The Midnight Library over this book.
Nobody wants something about suicide, but yes.
You know what I mean.
So I think I do have a few books I would recommend. The first one I think is I'm Glad My Mom Died, because I think that book is also a look at how someone lives and heals from complicated trauma. And I think ultimately Jeanette McCurdy has like a more hopeful end where she's kind of like learning to heal from what happened to her and it's a lot shorter. So I think, you know, you learn kind of some similar lessons from that book, but in a package that's a little bit easier. Not that it's easy to read that book. Also, just because I feel like you need therapy after you read this book. The Body Keeps the Score is a really good book. I've recommended it before. It's nonfiction about trauma, how trauma impacts the brain, how trauma impacts your body and your experience in the world. And so I actually think it's almost like a really good companion read to this book, because basically the therapist who wrote it is someone who works with people like Jude who've had like really significant traumas in their life. So I think reading that book helped me understand this book.
My recommendation is going to sound weird at first, but hear me out. Happy Place by Emily Henry. If you like the aspect of the story that is transforming college friendships into adult friendships while dealing with your own family trauma, personal issues, it's similar in that that's the topic. Happy Place is not necessarily happy. It's also fiction, but it's a little more light than this for sure. So if you like the idea of transitioning friendships and transitioning to being adults and what it comes with family, I would say Happy Place by Emily Henry.
And found family.
Right.
Yeah, well, rate and review this podcast. We want you guys to disagree with us. Rate and review this podcast. We want you guys to disagree with us. These are just our opinions. But like, you know, we are, of course, open and interested in other opinions. You know, several people were interested in hearing us review this book. Please let us know what you thought. And yeah, our handles are at VizzyGirlsPod pretty much everywhere. That's where you can find us to have a little discussion.
Right. That pretty much sums it up. Fans of A Little Life, please don't cancel us. We don't hate the book. It was just a lot.
You do hate it, but also let us know your thoughts.
With that, I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.